Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Today, I'm bringing you someone that I find is fascinating. He's got a great, great educational channel, and he helps people understand about investing, especially in the crypto space. His name is Alex Saunders. He's the CEO and founder of Nuggets News. So that's nuggetsnews.com.au. Go check it out. We're going to have a really interesting time with Alex. But basically, Alex has been immersed in cryptocurrency since he discovered Bitcoin back in 2012. Wish I'd discovered it then, Alex. But he's really got a unique investment style because he combines fundamental analysis with technical analysis and market sentiment as some of the key drivers. But he was a head pharmacist back in 2017, and then he switched over to something completely different. So please welcome Alex. Welcome to the program. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me, Kerry. Nice to catch up with you again after I met you in person and did a Bitcoin presentation at a gold conference, which was interesting walking into the lion's den. But I think there's a lot of reasons to be on the same team, which I'm sure we'll get into today.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I know that you have a big community of people that both seasoned investors, I guess, and those who are starting out. So let's just start a little bit with your backstory. I mean, how did you go from being in the pharmaceutical business to discovering Bitcoin about all those years ago, 8 years ago, back in 2012, when pretty much no one had heard about it? In fact, we had Jeff Berwick speak in 2011 at our gold conference, and he mentioned it to me, and I was like, well, that sounds very weird, and did nothing about it.
Okay. So it's funny, I actually lost some money during the GFC in 2008, which was my 21st birthday, showing my age a little bit. So my parents had given me some shares. They'd also put their super into the market, and then it all crashed. And I said, geez, have we lost half our money? And are we paying someone to lose half our money? And they said, yep. And I thought, wow, I want to learn how that works, and surely I can do a better job than that. And I really found it's almost easy, because a lot of it is not numbers and science and maths, which I'd always loved and done pharmacy. So I was working as a pharmacist, but this really became my passion whenever I wasn't at work and in my lunch break, reading about investing. Kept going down that rabbit hole into options and derivatives. And again, I just loved how it all worked and clicked together. So I was doing okay at that, I guess, but it's hard in that world to have an edge and compete with all, you know, in the stock market world where there's so much information and analysis. And then I became a bit of a gold and silver bug because they started QE and the money printing, and you had these, you know, these big debates about what was going to happen with all that. And then I found Bitcoin in 2012, and it was just something where, as soon as I read about it, to me, growing up with the internet and traveling a lot and seeing how much it costs and how hard it is to move money around the world, it just clicked. I just thought, you know, it's digital instant money. Everything else we do is digital and instant. This is going to catch on. So I invested and told my dad about it and twisted his arm to invest a little bit with me. You actually couldn't buy Bitcoin in Australia in 2012 when it was $10. It wasn't until the a few months later in 2013 when it was about $30 where I could finally work out how to buy some, believe it or not. Anyway, so yeah, that all sort of went on, and just kept learning about it. It was more fascinating, and it had a couple of bubbles in that time where it went to $1,000 and then crashed 90%. Then it went into that bear market for 2 years and no one was interested in Bitcoin. Then Ethereum came along and I got really interested in that as well, because that further expands what this technology was doing. And then finally, everyone started to get a bit interested in 2017 when the price was going up and people heard about others making money. I had some friends adding me to these different Facebook groups, and they're like, hey, my mates are talking about this Bitcoin thing. Isn't that what you always talk about? So I started to chat to other people and join these groups and answer questions. And I thought, well, the easiest way to address all these questions is to make a video. And one video just led to another video each day and answering more questions. And before I knew it, people were like offering me money to help them and for advice, like one-on-one chats. How do I get set up? I just don't understand it. I'm happy to pay for your time, sort of thing. So I never thought about, you know, offering or charging people to do something like that. And I offered that service and it just blew up. You know, we're talking hundreds of people, 1,000 people within a few months. And I thought, you know, I've got to quit my job here. This is my passion. The opportunity is coming. And my wife wasn't too keen because we were just about to get married and we wanted to start a family. And I was head pharmacist. And I said, I'm quitting my job to make YouTube videos. And she wasn't very happy with me. But it all worked out in the end. I'd had another friend who was out of work at the time. So he came on as like a manager and admin. Another young guy who I played cricket with, who was a bit of a tech guru, who'd been building websites. He sort of came along and built out a website. So it just all sort of fell into place. And then crypto went into that bubble and popped. And some people lost interest and lost engagement. But really, we actually found that 90% of our audience stayed on and kept paying their membership. They were still interested. We were doing a lot of education and advice. It wasn't all about just, you know, Bitcoin's going to keep going up and make you rich. That was never our focus. It was always education. So yeah, the last 2-3 years now have been very exciting. We cover all the best technologies and the best projects in the space. That's led to some very good investments. Like everything, this space is super risky. So we've had one or two bad ones, but to be honest, we've probably had 20 or 30 good ones. So yeah, we've done really well. We've bought a real, real loyal fan base and paid subscriber base for our newsletters and all our research we do in the gold and silver space and the crypto space now. We talked about the housing market. We talked about coronavirus because of my healthcare background when that came along. So we're really just trying to educate people on anything that's relevant and they want information on. We get guests on when I can't answer questions. So yeah, that's I guess everything that we do at Nuggets News, and very exciting for where the space is now and everything that is happening.
Yeah, and it is changing. You know, you go back to 2012, you said you couldn't even buy Bitcoin in Australia then, and it was only until 2013. I think the technology has changed a lot. I mean, you know, I'm nowhere even close to where you are, but you know, I'm an investor, so I'm always looking. And I say to my followers all the time, as they know, look, I'm not a financial advisor, but the best advice I can give you is hedge and diversify. And I think that when we hit the heady heights of Bitcoin back in 2017, when it was getting up to that $20,000 mark, I think at that time, it's like that's when people that know nothing go all in and then lose everything. And I think you and I are on the same page where we don't want people to do that. You know, they've got to understand the fundamentals. And that's why I'm excited to have you on board today, because I really want to talk about that educational component. And you mentioned membership. So what do people do? They come to Nuggets News and join as a member. And what does that give them?
So I should start by saying that 90% of everything we do is free. So if you're a beginner, we've got just loads of free stuff on our website, all our YouTube videos every day, that's all free. But for those that want that bit extra, we have a range of products from a newsletter each month, you know, and really low cost. We wanted to keep this education super affordable. So everything from $9 a month to membership, which is $50 a month. That includes those reports and access to our community where you can chat and ask questions and talk about the news, talk about the charts if you want to be a trader. So yeah, we basically have 1,800 people in that group now, and everyone from 80-year-old grandmas to traders, and they're allowed to ask questions and everyone gets along pretty well with the we've got moderators, obviously. So that's what you get if you become a member of ours, and that's worked really well.
Okay, well let's dive a little bit deeper into let's look at some of this educational side of things. Are you seeing that there's obviously from 2012 when you first discovered Bitcoin, we're now sitting in coronavirus land, it's 2020. A lot of people worried about what to do and whether things are going to get even more volatile. And Bitcoin's it's come back a little bit in the last couple of weeks. Do you think people should be seriously looking at it? It's got a lot easier, I think, for people to get involved. What are your views on, you know, if somebody doesn't understand it? There are so many, I mean, Bitcoin isn't the only cryptocurrency out there, digital money, if you like. How do you see it expanding, and what do you think people should do if they're just starting out?
So if you're just starting out, it's important to just understand Bitcoin first and don't even think about going into these other, you know, think of them like penny stocks. They're just so risky if you don't know what you're doing. And there's a lot of scams out there. So probably 99% of projects are going to fail. There's probably 5 or 10,000 coins out there these days if you really want to look on all the different websites. So look, we only really stick to the top 100 that we can do a lot of research on and we think are the best ones. But yeah, if you're a beginner, just get your head around Bitcoin first before you worry about anything else. A lot of the confusion comes from people saying things like digital gold, and then the gold bugs get upset because they say, no way, it's nothing like gold. Bitcoin is a bit of a technology play because it's trying to build a new payments network for the world, big or small. You can send money to anyone, anywhere in the world. We've now got Microsoft building their new digital identity system on top of Bitcoin. So people don't realize it's actually like a network that you can build other sort of programs on top of or piggyback off because it's so secure. So it's got all these other components to it. And that's why I think it's just at a $100 billion market cap, it's just got so much room to grow. The same with Ethereum as well, which we might get to later. But I think the investment thesis back in 2012, for me, it was just look at all this global debt and the money printing that's starting. This is a currency that has a set amount of units and the inflation drops every 4 years, where your listeners might have heard of that halving. It's now more scarce than gold, which has a new inflation rate of about 2 or 3%, the amount of new gold that's mined each year. So we have this currency that's very scarce at a time when all these other currencies around the world are being printed, you know, another $1 trillion each week at the moment. It's just nuts. So that's obviously very strong for gold. We think it's very strong as we move into a more and more digital world, where all these currencies are basically already digital because less people are using cash. But now you've got all the governments and central banks around the world talking about issuing their own digital currencies.
Yeah.
So once you get to that point, it's just about, well, there's one that they're going to keep printing trillions of, and there's another one that's scarce. So that's going to become more valuable, all things remaining equal. Then you've got other arguments like negative interest rates, you know, bank failures across Europe and certain countries. The stock market had that liquidity crunch the other day. A lot of people being told they can't access their super, or that you can't sell that ETF, or the market's closed. You know, all these reasons why having digital assets in your own custody, it's just, yeah, there's so many bullish theses that I can go into more detail about. But that's really why I like Bitcoin and crypto assets.
Well, when we speak about Bitcoin, people have turned around and poo-pooed it in the past, but And, you know, I'm talking from not a lot of knowledge, but could another, like, I know that Facebook were talking about Libra. Is there another type of digital currency that could come along and knock Bitcoin off its perch?
So the things that Bitcoin doesn't have in its favor at the moment, I guess, are the volatility. So no one wants to park their money in something that goes down 80%. But at the same time, if you zoom out, anyone that's held Bitcoin for more than 2 or 3 years has seen a huge profit. And that's been true for 11 years now. So over time, it's a bit like gold or silver. Someone can cherry pick a date and say, gold's a great store of value. And someone else can say, well, silver was $50 and now it's $20. That's down 70%. You know, they can cherry pick if it's a good or bad store of value because it's volatile. Now, that's one of the reasons that stable coins have really taken off. So these digital versions of US dollars, or there's Aussie dollar stable coins. We've even got gold tokens now. It's pegged to an ounce of gold.
Explain stable coin for those out there, and myself included. How does that actually work?
So a stable coin gets its value from pegging itself to something in the real world. So banks and exchanges can launch a US dollar stable coin, and for each $1 in the bank, they have a $1 token, and I can send that to you. And because of how good the payment rails are in the crypto world, obviously sending you a dollar, whether you're in Africa or Russia or Tasmania down here with me, we can basically do that instantly and for free these days. So that is way better for micropayments than the traditional system. It's impossible for me to send someone in Africa $1 because of the article that they wrote as an entrepreneur on their website. So just opening up global commerce. And that's why we've seen these digital dollars, they've blown up in market cap from 1 billion to 10 billion just this year alone.
Wow.
And I think it's going to probably even surpass Ethereum or Bitcoin in market cap because of how good these are. They're far better than the banks or any payment rails we have even TransferWise and, you know, all these other Revolutes, these, you know, these kind of new digital payments apps, crypto is a step further and better than that even. So yes, I do think that that is competition, but when we go back to what I was saying before, they're pegged to a US dollar, which the Fed is printing trillions of. So they're stable in the short term, but they're losing value over the medium to long term.
Right.
And I think Bitcoin is going to keep growing and become one of the sort of currencies, like we talk about the euro, the Aussie dollar. There's 100 plus currencies around the world at the moment, and a lot of them have got market caps in the hundreds of billions of dollars, and you wouldn't even know the name of them, you know, these countries throughout Southeast Asia. And all these fiat currencies around the world, they're not backed by gold anymore. They're just backed by the faith of the citizens. At the moment, governments are in a lot of debt and they're printing all these currencies. There's the currency wars. As one prints, no one wants to have a higher currency, so they print more as well. So it's just this race to debase your currency. And people understand these arguments because of gold. And it's the same kind of arguments here. But gold and Bitcoin are very finite in terms of their supply and relative to everything else going on. So that is the kind of bullish case there. A gold stablecoin, for example, would be Perth Mint offer this, Ainsley Bullion in Australia offer this in their vaults. If you buy a token of silver, they have an ounce of silver that's allocated to you. So it's pegged, and then you can
one for one.
Yeah, and you can move it around the crypto world, and you can either, you know, redeem it and get delivery, or you can sell it back to them because it's just silver in their vaults, the same as selling a coin back to them. So it's just a digital version of that silver. Now, obviously, there's a lot of scams out there that don't have an ounce of gold backing them. So that's why I'd only ever trust Perth Mint or Ainsley Bullion if I was going to buy a gold-backed coin. Now, some gold and silver fans, obviously, they like the fact that it's in their own custody and it's in their own safe. They would never trust a digital version, or they don't need a digital version. But I just think it's interesting that these things are out there and that they're really taking off for digital payments around the world because of all the reasons I described, as well as things like medical marijuana businesses, adult entertainment, tattoo parlors. There's a lot of real world businesses, crypto businesses that can't get a bank account these days. So their only option is to use crypto. And we have this saying about becoming your own bank, because these days your phone, all you need to do is download an app and I can send you a stable coin anywhere in the world. So it's far easier than getting a bank account.
Have you, I want to go back to banks in a second. Have you heard of something called Coin, which is like a barter card type digital thing? Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just so, like, I honestly, everything is a scam until proven otherwise in this space, because yeah, everyone promises returns or sign up this person and we'll give you a bonus. Like, there's a lot of Ponzi sort of schemes as business models out there that I'm very cautious of.
So how do you steer clear, or because there is so much out there, and you know, we don't like people to be scammed. So when does it go from being, you know, I'm wary of this, to that's passed the sniff test?
When they're promising returns, like promising monthly returns, or giving big bonuses to signing people up, and there's just no clear business model or long-term sustainability. Like, I can, you know, you can look at something and say, well, how are they making money? They're giving out money to everyone and promising money for signing people up. I've done detailed videos on what we look for to basically put a red cross through something, because until proven otherwise, you should always suspect that it's a scam or a Ponzi scheme in this space. And sometimes people don't even realize that what they're doing is not sustainable, because we've got these young guys just starting these coins and doing startups. But we also have some very, very intelligent scams that we've seen that we help. I've worked with regulators. So I was a board member of Blockchain Australia for 2 years, yeah, and worked with regulators to bring down these scams as well.
Why is Bitcoin the granddaddy? Is it because it was the first kid off the block, or is it because it's got such robust systems around it?
So, I mean, the valid argument is that Bitcoin is not backed by anything either, but you get to, neither is the US dollar or the euro or any of those. And it's the same kind of argument. Well, why is the US dollar stronger and more sought after than the Aussie dollar? Well, it's because of the network effects that the, you know, it's just ingrained in global commerce. You've got that kind of trust that the US Fed aren't going to print too much more of it, well, up until recently. So it's all relative. And that's the really important thing to understand. Now, Bitcoin's been around for 11 years. The network itself is by far the most secure because you've got all those computers around the world that are mining cryptocurrency or keeping the network stable and processing those transactions. So it just has network effects and security that are a factor of 100 or 1,000 better than a lot of other cryptocurrencies. Just the fact that there's 1,000 times more users that are using it and seeing it as a store of value. Now, some people can argue that it's not a store of value or they don't like it as a payment system, but you know, try telling that to people in Venezuela, Argentina, Zimbabwe. You know, that list just gets longer every single year. These countries that are experiencing hyperinflation or their banks are collapsing or there's capital controls, the ATMs are empty, they can't get a bank account. You know, the reasons that people are using Bitcoin, and it is up to 50% of transactions in some of these countries now that are experiencing hyperinflation, they're using Bitcoin or stablecoins. So you can bury your hand in the sand and say, oh, Bitcoin's nonsense, it's not backed by anything. But for these people, it has more utility than any other financial system that they have at their fingertips.
Well, our current fiat currencies aren't backed by anything. You know, 1971, Nixon took the US dollar off the gold standard. It's just paper money now. And right now they're printing, I think last month the US printed $1 trillion. You know, out of thin air, it's really crazy. But the majority of people out there, I think, are asleep. They're not really seeing how this potentially, even here in Australia, could lead to inflation. I don't think it will happen straight away, but I think down the road, we are going to have inflation.
And even if it doesn't, so in the past 10 years, it hasn't led to inflation, which surprised a lot of people. Probably myself included, when I first became a gold and silver bug, I was one of those people that thought it was going to cause inflation. I've since learned otherwise or changed my mind a little bit. And that's because all that money that's been created is going to the wealthy and it's going to the banks, it's going to financial assets, it's not really getting into the real economy. And so what we've seen is the inequality gap widen, and the Fed deny that they're the cause of it, but it's crystal clear. You can look at the chart of money printing and the chart of the stock market and just see that it's got that very high correlation. So what COVID has done and this stock market crash has done, there's a lot of people at home that are asking questions about why things are crashing and what is going on. But they also see on the news that the Fed printed $1 trillion, or the Australian government, the RBA, sorry, the central bank, started printing money to buy bonds off our government. And people say, well, where did they get that money from? And Josh and the Treasury Department miscalculated that JobKeeper by $60 billion or whatever it was. And people say, oh, we should do something else with that $60 billion. But then you try to explain to people, well, that $60 billion never existed. It doesn't exist now, and it's not sitting in a bank account somewhere at the Fed, at the RBA or the government or the banks. Money is created out of thin air, and people are starting to say, well, oh, okay. Well, why do I need to pay taxes if the government can create money out of thin air? Or why do we have these interest rates that the banks have to keep my funds and deposits, and why are they charging me negative interest rates if they can create money? So people are starting to ask these questions that they didn't get taught at school. They didn't really understand. Gold and silver bugs and crypto enthusiasts have been jumping up and down and banging the table saying these things for 10 years. But now it's a bit more under their nose and more people are saying, well, yeah, I guess that's right. That does make sense. They did print $1 trillion and the stock market's gone up. But there's now people, I think the riots are a side effect of inequality as well as the racial issues or whatnot. So all these things are really coming to a surface. And if the stock market keeps going up to record highs while we have 40 million people unemployed, it is like expect more social unrest in every country, basically.
Yeah. And you saw a lot of people get it, like, and I'm talking, you know, this is the clever, what I call the clever money, although it's the sneaky money, if you like, that got in as the market crashed, pushed the market to all-time highs, made themselves an absolute monster of money, and where a lot of people are suffering. And I think that that's why we're going to get, and I've been saying it for 2 years now, social unrest is going to be the biggest challenge going forward for all of us, even here in Australia. We're going to see more and more of it, and people are getting angry because they don't know how to, and if people get to the point where supply chains are disrupted and they can't get their basics like food, we're going to see it's going to get worse. But does cryptocurrency start to balance that out? And that's my question number one. And question number two is, if the Bitcoin community, I guess, or that currency becomes more and more used by people, Do you see that the banks start to become irrelevant? And is there, you know, are we going to start to see some of the big banks kick back a little bit?
So when I was 21 and a bit more of a cypherpunk back when I first discovered Bitcoin, I would have said, yeah, you know, replace the banks, burn them down. Now I think that you're probably never going to replace all the functions of banks to some degree, but a lot of what they do these days, and including the fees that they charge, are for basically, you know, things that software is already doing. You know, when I send money internationally or monthly account fee, you know, this stuff can all be replaced by decentralized software on a blockchain instead of the software in the bank's computers that's charging people money. So that's going to bring down their profits. It's going to level the playing field. Bitcoin as a currency is, in some ways, it's going to make governments more responsible. Or if they want to put negative 5% on your bank account in a few years' time in the next downturn, or they want to print $1 trillion, Bitcoin is jumping up and down saying you're $1 trillion better off if you had have parked whatever wealth you have here. Now, over the short term, you know, the chart goes up and down and there's a lot of trading and speculating in the crypto world. But if you just zoom out and get rid of all that noise, that's why the chart, on even on exponential growth, has just gone up and up over time from no value in 2010 to $100 billion market cap now. And I think it's going to compete with Forex, and gold's got a $10 trillion market cap, maybe not that big, but I think it's going far higher than $100 billion now because, you know, whether or not you like it as a speculator or you don't believe in it, there are people around the world every day by the tens or hundreds of millions that are starting to use Bitcoin and stable coins, going down this journey and using this system instead of the banks and the financial system in their country. And that's why it's going to continue to grow in market cap. And it just looks comparatively and relatively more attractive every time they print some more money or they do some interest rate cuts or they, you know, charge you bank account fees, whatever it is. There's nothing that Bitcoin isn't more attractive at doing compared to this other system where people have their bank account frozen or, yeah, you know, they can't access it on a weekend. They can't go in, you know, after work hours. It's better at everything. So,
yeah, I think the banks are trying to play catch up a little bit at the moment. But if we go back to 2017, where it was massive speculation and, you know, Bitcoin got up to 20,000 and people were jumping in. And then, of course, it dropped back by, what was it, 50, 70%.
More than that, 80-odd percent, yeah.
It was 80-odd percent, which is a huge drop. So do you think that that sort of, I guess, speculative hysteria, once that sort of eases back and instead of having those big highs and lows, if Bitcoin starts, is it going to have that sort of more smoothing out so that more people, I guess, have a trust in it rather than just as a speculation?
Yeah, so in the very early days, it had 90%+ corrections. And where I think it's going, it's going to end up like a normal currency that has maybe 20 or 30% annual fluctuations, just like the Aussie dollar has this year. But because it is growing to that $1 trillion+ market cap, it's not just a straight line. So we have these times where it goes up and people hear about their mate that doubled their money. And then that's why the chart looks perfectly like those Wall Street cheat sheets, the psychological booms and bust cycles that you see. And that's because that really is what is determining price over the shortish to medium term, because over the longer term, it's growing to this multi-trillion-dollar market cap. But it's never going to be a straight line because it goes up and that builds speculation and euphoria. And then obviously people that bought at 1,000, when it gets to 20,000, they go, well, I'm rich, and they sell. And then we have a crash and it goes down. But then it gets oversold and we get to the other extreme where people are fearful and they think it was a bubble and then it goes all the way down to 3,000. But it's never, ever gone back down to where it started. It always keeps growing over the medium to long term in a very steady fashion as more money goes into Bitcoin. And that's why I see those cycles are going to continue for at least one or two more super cycles until we get to that multi-trillion-dollar market cap. And then I expect the volatility to settle down.
What do you think of those people out there like, I think it was Peter Schiff who said, Bitcoin's going to go to zero. And in fact, Peter Schiff was given some Bitcoin and then he lost it. So he clearly doesn't care a toss for Bitcoin and says, and there's a couple of people out there that say, listen, don't even bother, it's going to zero. And then you have people like Max Keiser saying, it'll be a million US dollars a Bitcoin. what are your views on those extreme arguments?
I mean, Peter Schiff does understand finance and economics reasonably well, and he's taught me some good lessons. And these people have obviously, a lot of the time, they've got something to sell. So his whole life is around gold and silver. He's not just going to flick the switch and start cheering Bitcoin. But we've had a lot of those gold and silver crowd who have joined the crypto community because they understand the fundamentals and the lessons behind it. Now, I'm still very bullish on gold and silver because 5,000-year track record, when we have a liquidity crunch like we have the other day, there's the big funds around the world. They're not just going to decide they need to put a heap of money into Bitcoin, this new speculative, shiny tech thing. Of course not. They're going to park money in gold. And if we get negative interest rates and the US bond market isn't as appealing as it has been, you know, all these reasons why I just think gold is just going to grow massively because of how much money is out there, trillions and trillions of dollars that are parking in negative yield bonds. You know, they're going to start to look more favorably on gold and silver. So I've remained bullish on gold and silver this whole time, which I think our audience have appreciated, particularly in Australia. That's obviously done really well in Aussie dollars and the gold and silver miners, which we talk about. So look, gold and silver definitely has its place. Crypto is a, you know, it's more speculative. It has a tech play. It has a payments network sort of side to it. It's got that uncorrelated nature to it. Now, at the moment, it's being fairly correlated to markets. But over the medium to long term, I just think there's, well, what we are seeing is very wealthy clients that are putting 0.5% of their total wealth into Bitcoin. Because it doesn't really matter if it goes to zero. Not that I think it's any danger of that happening. Peter Schiff and those guys have been saying it's going to zero every year for 6 or 7 years, and they've been dead wrong. But yeah, we are seeing a lot of wealthy people compared to just speculators and retail investors in 2017. We still see those to some degree, but now, you know, we get some people, doctors, dentists, even fund managers, putting in hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars into Bitcoin, and we're, I guess,
fund managers now.
Yes, around the world, we have got the first few fund managers that are publicly saying it. You know, the Paul Tudor Joneses of the world, he's out there saying it now. I just think you can't argue against it. And some people can bury their head in the sand, and some people have refused to learn how to use a smartphone or a computer. But this is a new technology that's been around for 11 years now. There's a reason it's been the best performing asset every year, apart from one, and it's going to continue to grow just because of how easy and better it is to use. And everyone has a smartphone. Yeah.
So you're fairly bullish, obviously, on Bitcoin. You're still bullish on gold because of all this money printing out there. I'd like your views on the gold and the silver. And then if we could move on to Ethereum, because I have some Ethereum, so I'm really keen to hear your views on Ethereum. Because I got to be honest with you, Alex, I bought Ethereum because I had no clue what I was doing. But my son, who's quite savvy, said, "Mum, just buy some Ethereum." I'm like, "Oh, okay."
Okay. So yeah, gold's grown to around, say, $10 trillion market cap. So that obviously has less, it's harder for gold to do a 10x return because it has to go to $100 trillion market cap. So yes, I like gold, it's performed well, but I think risk to reward wise, I'm more attracted towards Bitcoin. But gold's still going to be that safe haven, like we've said. With COVID, there's a lot of mines that have gone offline, so maybe that new supply goes down and new discoveries. Silver, that gold to silver ratio is really blown out. So silver used to be, the smaller for more transactions and more people saw it like that for spending and saving, whereas I think cryptocurrency in some way has... Well, I see it firsthand. There's a lot of people from that silver crowd that became crypto investors, and they still like both. But it's kind of competing for that money in some way, I do think. Now, if gold becomes really attractive again and goes to $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 an ounce, I think people are going to walk into that coin store and they're going to want to buy silver because they're not going to want to buy a quarter of a coin with the $1,000 they've got. People want to see that metal and touch it. So, look, I think silver will come back, but it's more about the tech side of it. Is it going to be used in solar, medicine? Is it going to have that real industrial component? Does that suffer if we go into a recession or a depression? Yeah. It's that monetary versus industrial component that's leaving a lot of people saying, well, I like gold, I like crypto, I'm not so sure about silver. But we've also got these counter arguments about the ETFs and the paper markets and all the derivatives. Have they been sort of suppressing the price or taking away from demand that would flow into the real asset. And when we saw that demand for physical delivery, whether it was COVID or there wasn't enough gold, those orders couldn't be met. We saw the sort of separation of the two markets, and there was a bit of an arbitrage opportunity there, even more so with silver. So at the end of the day, it's kind of those American financial markets that have been dictating the price. And I just feel like that's changing. We see global central banks buying gold. Maybe they start buying some silver as well. Maybe they start buying a little bit of Bitcoin. It's just nobody wants to be first. But as soon as they hear that someone else has done it, like, nobody wants to be last. And if everyone's printing around the world and one central bank says, well, we've got a lot of gold, we've got some silver, we're going to get some Bitcoin, whatever it is that, we think can hedge or make our currency stronger, you know, who are we to argue with how much, you know, we don't like it or don't think it's right? It's just what's going to happen.
It's what the market dictates too. And also it is becoming more understood. And I think I think the technology around the cryptocurrency space has also improved so much, because I know that it was a lot harder for me to sort of do certain things way back when. And now, you know, I can pay my bills with Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, we've got, we did a tutorial the other day for CoinJar. So they've got a card. There's a number of companies that have got a card. So you could just pay wherever you can pay with your other debit cards with crypto. Like, it's literally, you can pay for anything with Bitcoin these days. So a lot of people still don't realize that yet.
I actually think that's a really good point, because you can, it's becoming a lot easier, because I've been talking to some people and they're like, well, why would I pay in Bitcoin? I don't even know how to do that. And I'm like, well, you pay with a MasterCard or a Visa. It's exactly the same.
Yeah.
It's just linked to your account and you tap and go.
But again, why would I want to pay with my Bitcoin if I think it's going higher? So it's more of a savings vehicle at the moment. If you're going to Bali on a holiday, maybe it is way easier for you to pay with Bitcoin and get money out there at those ATMs than it is to get a international bank card and pay the fees and the exchange rates. That's kind of one of the reasons why I do like Bitcoin as well.
Well, certainly I was actually in Bali at Christmas time last year, and I took some money out of the ATM. I came back and went, what? The charges were outrageous. But again, as these interest rates continue to go down and potentially into negative, you know, the banks are in all sorts of trouble in terms of, you know, how do they, you know, they're no longer the money-making machine that they used to be.
Or even just like, we've got one of our partners, Marin Katusa, who I'm sure you guys know. You know, we were doing some work for them and they were doing some work for us, and there was a chunk of money that had to be paid, you know, five figures, $10,000, $20,000. And we worked out that was probably going to cost $1,000 of that $10,000 because of the Canadian and Australian exchange rates and the volatility at the time, as well as the bank fees. And so we helped them get set up with a crypto exchange, and they sent it to us in, we gave them the option, or Bitcoin or a stable coin. And instead we lost, you know, $1 on the conversion.
Wow.
in and out. So, I mean, that is just that real world example of, it's just a matter of time for me until this takes off, because it's better than the banking system.
And it's faster, isn't it? I mean, I the other day you were talking about the stable coins. I actually needed to move some Australian dollars to US dollars. And my friend Brady said, we'll just get USDT. I went, what's that?
Oh, one of our most popular videos during that crash was, how do I get into US dollars? And we were showing people that, hey, just sign up to this exchange, send your money in. And again, you can convert Aussie dollars to US dollars or to US dollar stable coins on these crypto exchanges. And most of them these days have got fees down to about 0.1%. So it's way better than you're going to get on a bank or anywhere.
Oh, I better start watching a few more. I've seen a few of your videos. I think I need to start watching a few more. let's go on to Ethereum. So Ethereum was it the third one off the... So it was Bitcoin came first, wasn't it?
And Bitcoin came first. There was a few others, a lot of copycat coins that sort of... They said they're a little bit different, but again, it's like, well, what gives you value? The reason Ethereum was different when it came along was it was trying to do something different. So it wasn't trying to be a money or a currency per se. And this is where we get more into, well, the technology underlying this called blockchain, it's good for things that need to be decentralized, meaning that anyone can join and it's an open network. Anyone can download a wallet, become a crypto miner, join the community basically. Yeah. And then you say, well, that's money is the biggest thing we need to replace in the banks. But the next biggest thing that needs a huge makeover is the internet. So Facebook, YouTube, those big tech companies, they have got all the power, they've got all the data. You know, it's become very, very centralized, and even governments are aware of how much power they have now, and they're trying to maybe break them up. So what Ethereum set out to do was build a, they call it like a world computer, where basically everyone can use this Ethereum network instead of the internet network, and you don't have to have the Facebook that has all your data, or you know, YouTube can delete one of our videos as they've done if they don't like it. And that's becoming a big problem on Twitter, Facebook, all these different platforms where censorship, they don't like it, they'll demonetize you, or they'll just delete the video, or they'll delete your account. And that's your life's work with all your data and all your videos. So Ethereum says, well, we'll...
Sorry to interrupt you, Alex. So you've actually had content deleted from what platform?
Well, I had our Facebook account deleted once and our YouTube channel. Over Christmas, there was a huge purge, and it was a YouTube algorithm that actually went a bit haywire. So they didn't even mean to do it. But a lot of YouTubers got videos taken down. We had hundreds taken down, and we were like one strike away from having our channel gone forever. And that's a big chunk of our business.
Wow.
And YouTube basically, they're very hard to get hold of anyone. So that we didn't even really find out what happened. There was just a, sorry, it's been reinstated a week or two later. And you don't know what you did wrong, or so that's really scary. And that's why this new internet that Ethereum wants to build is anyone can build an app or a website on that, and it's open to anyone. So we already have these new, like a decentralized YouTube where anyone can upload their videos. And these days, it's funny, when someone makes a video that's a bit controversial and it gets deleted in YouTube land, everyone on Twitter goes, oh, here's the link to, you know, the Ethereum video program. And go watch it there, because that's immutable.
And what's the Ethereum program?
Well, there's a few. There's libraries, one that we use. That's actually not an Ethereum. That's another of its own blockchain. And then we have DTube. There's half a dozen now. So, yeah, there's all these different communities that are building these different... It's just the same as the internet. That's the way to think of it at home. It's the internet, but it's unstoppable. It's decentralized. You can send your money or your stable coins straight there to pay for things instead of having to link a bank account. Your crypto is all sort of linked in the website because you're on this network already. Another good example might be people are pretty familiar with, say, Amazon Web Services. So when you have a website, you need to host your website on some computers somewhere, and everyone pays Amazon because they've got all the computers. Well, now we have a decentralized computer network. So anyone with a computer at home can say, well, I'll lease out my computer and I'll get paid. And they might make $1 an hour leasing out their spare hard drive or their spare processing power. So it's like a decentralized world computer, and anyone can join and contribute. So this is all the stuff that's happening on Ethereum at the moment. And it's, think of it very much as a technology play versus a money gold replacing the banks sort of play. But it also has a native token or a currency, which is called Ether or ETH on the Ethereum blockchain. And that's used to process payments, used for computing power, used to back loans. It's basically like the oil of the global digital system, you can think of it as. And that's been very, very popular, very, very good performing asset. Over the sort of 5 years it's been around now.
Okay, Alex, I could talk to you for hours and hours, but we're running out of time. There's a couple of things I want to ask you. First of all, I think you recently made some commentary on the Australian financial, where we're sitting and your views on that. I'd like to hear about that. And also, what's next for Nuggets News? I mean, you're growing a lot, and also... where people can find you. So first of all, do you think we're about to go off an economic cliff here in Australia, or do you think we're going to be like 2008 and scoot through it?
I think there's a few things working in our favour, like the low COVID cases and very attractive, like healthy food, clean air. So we might actually see like wealthy millionaires from China and Hong Kong really want to come and move to, say, some of their suburbs, or maybe down to Tasmania where you can buy a property on the beach, like that might become really, really valuable compared to these countries that keep having these COVID rebounds. You just never know. In terms of our economy, we did a documentary people might want to check out about Australia, and people are surprised that we're 93rd in terms of economic complexity, which means we're not very good at much. We're good at digging rocks out. We've got a big construction industry and a housing bubble, and that all feeds into the banking system, and that all feeds into our superannuation system, and it's all basically a house of cards. Now, some things we do well are tourism and education, but that's collapsed at the moment with COVID and the friction with China at the moment. So if things stay the way they are, I think Australia is definitely heading into a big recession. Well, they've already kind of admitted that we're probably in one already. So unless we reshape and update our economy to focus on science, health, education, research, you know, every time we have a downturn, they seem to focus on what's housing stimulus can we do? And it's just kicking the can down the road, borrowing demand from the future. Who cares if we build some more houses? It's just ridiculous, in my opinion. So yeah, I think Australia needs a big shake up.
You said bubble before, so you feel like we're in a bit of a bubble in certain sectors?
I think if you just look at historical numbers and average wages compared to the value of houses, very few places around the world put 40% of their income into their mortgage. People would rather put 20% and go on a holiday or spend money on leisure and pleasure. Whereas in Australia, it's just like, you know, oh, we need to buy a house. It's going to be an $800,000 mortgage and you're going to be putting 40% of your wealth into that, you and your partner, for the next 30 years. You know, it's a chain on your whole life, but people, it's just the normal to get on the property ladder in Australia. And we've had all these things that incentivize that, negative gearing and the lending standards, the Royal Commission. So look, it is a house of cards compared to other countries when you look at the value of property.
So final thoughts, if people want to understand or at least not hedge and diversify, but just protect themselves right now, I always say to people, be resourceful and get educated. What are your views?
So on our website, we've just got dozens and dozens of free modules and education about Bitcoin, Ethereum, how to be your own bank, stable coins, the world of decentralized finance, because it's growing so much. There's a big demand for a lot of these companies to borrow your coins for their projects, is a simplified way of thinking of it. And you can get 5% to 8% annual yield, which is a lot better than zero in a bank account these days. So that's one of the reasons it's growing so fast. Now, you do have to avoid the scams, like I said before, because there's a lot of scams out there that'll promise you they'll give you 5% a month, but they're the pyramid scams we were talking about at the start. So what's next for us? We want to continue to be the one-stop shop for education about gold and silver, bringing in experts for when we can't teach people the basics, the more advanced stuff, cryptocurrency. We just want to give commentary on what is relevant, what people need to know, what's happening with the central banks printing money and interest rates around the world. And then further on from that, just really talking about anything that's relevant that people find interesting. I really like Joe Rogan style podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's a huge interest out there for people to talk about these really interesting things that are happening around the world that they don't see on TV at night when The Bachelor and MasterChef and these programs are on. People are craving interesting content and we want to cover everything for people.
Okay, so where can they find you?
So nuggetsnews.com.au. Nuggets News is our YouTube channel, and Alex Saunders on Facebook or Twitter. But if you want to join our community, I do daily updates on everything, and hopefully we can educate you on what's going on. And we don't encourage people to rush in and buy it or anything like that, but just understand it, know that it's there, and you might change your mind in 6 months' time when you might be in Europe and the bank where you are might be collapsing. You say, well, I know how to become my own bank and buy some of those stable coins people were talking about.
Yeah. Very, very, very solid advice there. So, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, thank you, Alex, for joining us today. It's been fascinating. I'm learning all the time, and I love helping our community to learn. Now, if you liked what you heard, please hit the subscribe button and the like button, share it with everybody, make sure that people understand that Alex is out there, he's helping educate people as I am. And as I always say, I'm not a financial advisor, but my advice to you is stop watching broke flicks, get educated, be resourceful.